In her new book, Fat Talk Nation, The Human Costs of America's War on Fat, Harvard anthropologist Susan Greenhall makes clear that the war on fat, which is supposed to rescue America from obesity-induced national decline, is itself damaging the physical and emotional health of our young people and disrupting families and intimate relationships in the process. Greenhall says, "So all-encompassing is this war that all Americans, whether obese, overweight, normal, or underweight, have become collateral damage, miserable with their bodies, while also no one is able to lose weight and keep it off. The only solution, contends Greenhall, is to change the national conversation and reframe our relationship with our bodies and our health." Again, the name of the book is Fat Talk Nation, The Human Costs of America's War on Fat. Susan Greenhall is professor of anthropology at Harvard University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me on the show.
What brought you down this path of wanting to start this conversation that you believe we need to have?
For many years, I've taught a course that I call The Woman in the Body, and in 2011, I had the idea of offering my students extra credit to write personal essays on diet, weight, and the BMI in everyday life. I simply could not believe what they wrote. They wrote stories of their childhoods just devastated by being the victim of fat abuse, weight comments, nasty comments, their entire lives. And the sense of shame that they carried within them and the personal suffering that they endured as a result of having bodies was simply not part of the national conversation. We hear all the time about the cost to the nation of the obesity epidemic, things like higher healthcare costs, worse health, lower productivity. But we never hear about the costs of the war on fat itself to those individuals targeted for change. That's what these stories add to the conversation.
How did we reach this point where people who are obese became the ones wearing the black hats?
Well, believe it or not, it has a very long history in our culture. Going back to the 1860s, and especially since around 1900, heavy people in our culture have been targeted for shaming and for exclusion from what I call the political community of people considered deserving of the name Good Americans. Many of those people who had extra pounds were immigrants, people of color. It was an excellent, easy way to exclude people. And that, what happened is in the 1990s, the researchers at the CDC discovered a dramatic rise in obesity. And throughout the late 1990s, the public health community grew ever more concerned. And then in 2001, the Surgeon General issued a call to action for all Americans to fight to prevent and treat obesity. And then that was fine, but then that public health campaign incorporated this wider culture and morality around weight. So what started out as merely a public health campaign has mushroomed into what I call this wider war on fat. And in this war, we're defining weight as a moral matter. We divide Americans into two groups. If you're thin, you're good and you're deserving and you're good American. And if you're fat, you're bad and you're not deserving. So a lot of cultural weight behind what's going on today.
It is fascinating when you talk about the morality aspect of it, because I think you can make the comparison certainly to the war on smoking, right? But
yeah.
we treat those individuals differently.
Right, because smoking is a behavior, whereas weight is part of our bodies. They're very different. Yet the public health campaign uses the same kinds of tactics so that fat people feel like they themselves, their very selves, are under attack. It's not just a behavior, but their very bodies and who they are. So it's especially damaging to people.
Should just saying fat people be a derogatory term?
Should just saying fat people?
I mean, should referring to people as fat be a derogatory term?
It shouldn't be. The people in the fat acceptance movement believe that weight is a matter of bodily diversity, just like height is, and that we need to accept people of all weights as being valuable members of the community. But in any case, weights are very evenly distributed over the entire spectrum, so it should not be. Fat should be just another descriptor.
Because it is often used as a negative.
It's almost always used as a negative. Some people try to claim fatness as a positive identity, but very few people find that movement relatable. So it would require a gigantic cultural revolution to really redefine fatness as a positive attribute in our society. I would like to see us moving in that direction, but I think it's an uphill battle.
When it comes to, because we use these words like war and battle and you know, the war on fat and so forth, and the war on obesity, and I'm curious as to when there are so many things that cost this country money, what is it about obesity that many people pick up on and say, okay, this is the thing that I'm going to get upset about?
That's a very good question, Joe, and nobody really knows the answer to it. And I think it's because there's such a deeply historically embedded notion that fat is somehow bad. It was a convenient handle. Nobody's done this research, but it just so turns out that the war on obesity was officially launched just around the same time that the war on terror was launched. In the early 2000s, the then Surgeon General called obesity the terrorist threat within. So there is something to think about there. But, you know, I think obesity is also a very lucrative market. Many corporations, food, restaurant, and so forth, helped make us all fat. But they're also seeing in obesity an incredibly profitable market for all sorts of products that promise to make us slender, none of which work, of course, but all of which garner a lot of profits for those corporations.
I just want to circle back to something that we were talking about a moment ago, and that was when I was asking you the question of should the word fat be considered derogatory? And I'm interested because, I mean, I know personally that being called fat is different than being referred to as heavy.
Right.
So doesn't that become a derogatory term? And then shouldn't we start shifting that a realization that people shouldn't be called fat?
Well, people who are very fat, quote, severe, people who are very fat, they hate the word obese because they consider it a medicalizing term and a term that's dehumanizing, that it neglects who they are as people and reduces them simply to a body mass index above a certain level. So they claim the term fat, just as historically gay people claim the term queer as a positive term to define their identity. Over the last 10, 15 years, very heavy people have claimed the term fat to get away from the term obese. So there's a lot of cultural contestation around what the meanings are of these various terms. And I rather suspect that if we tried to eliminate the word fat and substitute heavy, then that too would become a negative term.
Understood.
It's just that all the things that go with it are deemed unappealing. But what's happened now, Joe, is that it used to be that heaviness or obesity was merely a matter of an unaesthetic appearance or so-called poor choices. But since around 1994, the public health community has made a big point of redefining it as a disease. So now that people who are deemed fat or have a very high BMI have the additional burden of carrying a disease, and then they're blamed for raising health care costs so that they're harming us all in the popular lingo. It's a very complicated linguistic formation.
You just mentioned BMI, and you read about this in the book, and I found it fascinating because you describe many young people as they recall in great detail when they first heard their BMI, their body mass index. And I guess the question is why that's such a memorable moment in someone's life, and should it be so life-changing to find that information out?
It was shocking. Stories of young girls lining up to have fitness tests at school, either in fifth grade or in seventh grade, and all the girls sort of whispering and gossiping about which girl had this BMI and which boy had that one. And then when kids have higher than normal BMIs, they're given a red slip with their number written on it, and it's shocking, because for a child, it's the first time he or she learns that she's abnormal, that there's something wrong with her. It's like a bodily flaw, because a high BMI of overweight or obese now means that you have a disease and that there's something fundamentally wrong with you. It's very disturbing. And that on top of the sort of the cultural blaming and the sense that it's immoral because it means you haven't taken responsibility for your body. All these things make it a source of incredible shame.
Susan Greenhall is the author of the book Fat Talk Nation, The Human Costs of America's War on Fat. You talk in the book about, when we're talking about children, and children who are obese that have been removed from the family unit sometimes, and the parents are blamed because they believe that those kids can be placed somewhere where they will have a better upbringing. What do we miss in a decision like that?
We miss the fact that parents really cannot control their children's weight. What I talk about in the book is a series of what I call biomyths. This is scientifically dubious ideas that circulate in our culture about weight and weight control. And the number one biomyth is the idea we all have that everybody can lose weight through diet and exercise if they just try hard enough. It's just a matter of willpower. In fact, that is absolutely not the case. Somewhere in the order of 50, 60, 70% of weight is genetically determined. Most of the rest of that is environmentally shaped. And then there's a little part that has to do with our own behaviors. But parents simply don't have that much control over kids' weight. So it's blaming the child and it's blaming the parents. And it's separating the family with really, really bad impacts on the kids and their parents.
I bring this up only because I think it's probably something that every listener is thinking about right now. maybe not every listener, but many of them. And that is, as they hear us discuss this, we should know it. And I'm only going by your author photo, but you are a thin person. Would your arguments have the same, and I pardon this, but would they have the same weight if you were heavy?
Well, Joe, it's very sad, and I believe the answer is no.
Right.
And it's true that I've been slender almost my entire life, and I enjoy, if you want to use that word, thin privilege. I've been privileged my entire life because everybody says I have a body to die for. Everybody thinks I'm this health hero, and I have great body because I exercise and diet, but it just ain't true. It's genetically determined. And what's really sad is that people who are very heavy may be major experts on these or other issues. They are given very little credibility. People assume, oh, they're fat. They're just trying to defend themselves when they talk about the obesity epidemic. It's right. Very sad, and I wish that would change.
When you think about this particular issue as a national conversation, it seems to be a conversation, as you said, a lot of things that we would have to discuss and be part of that, but it seems as though we just want to lay blame and not really have the conversation of what it could be to A, accept people who are heavy, one, and two, offer ways that people can live a healthier life where they are not seen as the enemy.
Right. I agree that we haven't had this conversation, and I think one reason is that these issues form along class and racial or ethnic lines. So most of the people, there's a real class gradient here, whereby lower income, less economically privileged people tend to live in poorer environments, have fewer opportunities to eat well, tend to be heavier. Similarly, among ethnic groups, it's the African Americans and Hispanics. And so it's an easy way to deflect talk that's racist and classist, to say nothing about sexist, to be talking about obesity. So that's one issue. As for ways people can live more healthfully, right, we need to offer more of those. But what's really remarkable, Joe, and I discovered this over many years of research, is that even though the federal government offers a huge amount of money for public health and clinical medicine and basic medical research on obesity and its consequences and its causes, we still do not know why obesity levels have gone up so fast, and we still don't know what to do to effectively treat them. It's really amazing. We know that is the world of medical science, how to help people lose 5 to 10% of their weight. And most people who are very heavy will have better health profiles if they're able to lose that amount of weight. But nothing short of bariatric surgery is going to get them down to even overweight levels. So we have a real problem with obesity, you know, and what I'm arguing is that what we're doing now is we're approaching obesity at very high levels poses serious health risks. That's an important part of this research. But what I'm arguing is that we're going at it the entirely wrong way by placing blame on individuals, by allowing us, even encouraging us to engage in all this fat talk all the time. It's just not working, and because weights are not going down. And on top of that, it's causing all this human harm that prior to this book has not been charted. It's not been acknowledged, let alone charted in any systematic way. We need to rethink this approach and do something really differently. And it's just amazing that the scientists don't know yet what's caused obesity to rise and what to do to treat it.
Let's talk about the harm, because much of this is psychological harm, you believe.
Right. Exactly. Incredible emotional harm. I talk about 3-4 different kinds of harm to individuals and to larger groups. For the individual, there's a dramatic impact on people's sense of identity or who they are. Amazingly, where people stand on the body mass index chart has a huge impact on their understandings of who they are. So that people who are very fat or only overweight, they think of themselves as fundamentally fat people. And that weight-based identity is the most important aspect of their own personal identity. And similarly, people are very skinny, quote, underweight on the BMI chart. They think of themselves as fundamentally skinny people. And the reason is everybody in their social worlds, to say nothing about the media and the doctors and the teachers, everybody's constantly telling them that weight, weight, weight is what's most important about them. So that's one thing, their sense on self. And with being a fat person comes a series of characteristics. People don't like themselves. They feel bad about themselves. They tend to be distressed and have low self-esteem. They're out there dieting and exercising in this vain attempt to lose weight, and they become socially isolated. So that's one set of harms. Another is, believe it or not, bodily harm. Because young people, they know no other message about weight other than thin is good, diet is good, exercise is good. That's what they know. So young kids being bullied about their weight, what do? They put themselves on drastic diets. I have cases of kids eating a banana a day for a week and feeling really proud of themselves. I have cases of boys exercising 2 or 3 hours a day and feeling like they're really in charge of their health. But what happens is those who undertake self-starvation diets, they black out. If they use some over-the-counter pills, I have cases of young people ending up in the hospital, breaking out in hives. I have cases of kids who permanently damaged their shoulder from exercising too much. In the 250 cases that I gathered, in fully 75% of those, the subject of the essay experienced bodily harm. That's amazing. Another thing, another type of harm is people who feel a lot of pressure to lose weight, they develop very disordered eating habits. In fact, disordered eating in this group of people, it was in Southern California, disordered eating was so common that it was just normalized. You're just expected, if you're a little overweight, to undertake a starvation diet. And so what happens is disordered eating sometimes, when it goes on, and you hear everybody praising you, if you're losing weight, people will say, "Oh my gosh, Joe, you've lost weight. You look great." So you get the idea that you're doing the right thing. And then people continue on their diets. They go on a kind of a weight loss high, and some people develop genuine eating disorders.
Mm.
So that's really disturbing. And then the last consequence harm that I talk about is damage to families and to intimate relationships. It's so sad because parents, but especially moms, they're given an impossible assignment. They're expected to make sure that all of their kids, but especially their daughters, are thin and fit. But moms don't have that kind of control. They can influence, but they can't control their kids' weights. And then daughters, feeling all this pressure from their moms to lose weight, the daughters feel very hurt because they think that their moms should love them unconditionally. And so many cases in the essays of just traumatic fights between mothers and daughters over the issue of weight. And in some cases, the daughter just gives in and does everything the mother tells her to. In other cases, the daughters just rebel and defy the mom. And whenever the mom tries to get the daughter to diet, the daughter does the opposite. But all sorts of trauma in the family. I have one case in which the middle girl out of three was basically drummed out of the family by her parents, who felt that her weight was a little bit too high, even though the doctor said her weight was totally normal. This girl was badgered and pressured so much that she went off to college and kind of drifted away from the family because she couldn't bear the pressure anymore. All these kinds of social harm, these are not part of the conversation today. Nobody has any idea. You know, they may know in their own family, and they'll think, well, my family is just really unusual. But your family is not unusual. There are a lot of cases out there. I think these need to be part of the conversation.
So with that, and that conversation that we need to have, now what? What do we do?
There's a good question. I wish I had the answer of what to do about the obesity question. I don't. That's for the public health and for the medical specialists. What I like to speak only on the basis of the data that I have. And what I would like to see is for all of us as individuals to start listening to the way that we talked. How do we talk to ourselves? Are we constantly berating ourselves about our weight? It's amazing. I have friends who are professors who have confessed to me that they have sat through an academic talk the entire time staring at the body of the speaker and wishing that they had that body. It's really amazing. So listen to our own fat talk. Listen to how we talk about others. You know, I myself have to catch myself. I'll say to somebody, "Wow, you look great. You go on a diet." And then I go, "Oh, stop it. That's fat talk. That can be really damaging." Because every time we talk about fat, it reminds the person that that's one of the most important things about them. So listen to our own fat talk. Try to stop it. Try to create fat talk-free zones. Try to get you and your family or friends to go for 2 hours without mentioning weight. And then we find when we're not talking about weight, we're talking about people's accomplishments or their values. And I think those are much better ways to identify with and engage with people. So that's one thing we can do. Another thing we can do is to stop fat bullying. You know, we all know that bullying is wrong, and bullying can have dire consequences. We've heard about cases of kids who committed suicide because they've been bullied at school or online. Well, weight bullying is one of the last legitimate forms of social discrimination. It's amazing. If we say something that's racist or sexist or homophobic, people jump all over us. If we say something that's fat bullying, we generally can get away with it. I think we need to stop that. I think we need to recognize that fat shaming is wrong and it's not legitimate, and to start calling people out on that. Those are some of the things that we can do.
Susan Greenhall is professor of anthropology at Harvard University. The book is Fat Talk Nation, The Human Costs of America's War on Fat, and it is published by Cornell University Press. Susan Greenhall, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your expertise. I appreciate it.
Joe, one last comment. If people haven't been able to look at the book and they're interested in reading some of the stories, they can go to the website, fattalknation.com. Read some of the stories. They can upload their own Fat Talk, but there's the place to start. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's fattalknation.com. The name of the book is Fat Talk Nation, and again, published by Cornell University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.